Of the minutes, you've all had an opportunity to look at the minutes. Are there any additions or corrections? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Move for approval. Move for approval.
Very good. Roger's making a motion, seconded by Jim. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous. Oral communications. Anyone in the audience or a member of the board wishing to address the board on city business other than those things that are on the agenda item, please do so now. Go before the thing and state your name.
Good evening. Nancy Castle, Morro Bay resident, taking a liberty with city business, perhaps. You're the first group to be informed that the Historical Society of Morro Bay has created a book simply titled Morro Bay, which is basically a photo album. Roger Castle, my brother, and Gary Ream, a planning commissioner, are the authors on behalf of the Historical Society. And my brother stated that it's basically a family photo album, and it covers quite a bit of the harbor as a chapter and a topic. And the book is on its way here, going by ground from North Carolina, and will be in town. Coalesce will be carrying them, as will many other places. And there will be a signing on July 2nd at Coalesce Bookstore downtown Morro Bay. And everybody is invited, and it's a real neat thing for Morro Bay and to continue the...
For the Historical Society, too. It only meets four times a year. It's a potluck. Everybody eats well. Everybody laughs and has a good time. And no matter how long you've been here, you learn something new at every meeting about the history of Morro Bay. So,
thank you, Roger. Anyone else? Very well. Moving on to presentations and action items. Rick, do you want to introduce Mike?
Sure. You or I, Mike Pond is... kindly agreed to come make a presentation to us tonight, so let's. I hope that mic's working, Mike.
Yes, I think so. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, great. Well, Mr. Chairman and Harbor Commission, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you tonight. As you can see by the overhead here, I'm here to talk about some critical issues in the city and update you on some of the financial issues that we're facing in the near future. My 29-year career in the fire service and dealing with emergencies and disasters has kind of given me the unique ability to see what we're potentially facing in the future. And what I see in the future is an emergency situation as far as replacing infrastructure, dealing with facilities, streets, storm drains, and some ongoing costs in the Parks and Rec Department, Fire Department, Police Department, pretty much Public Works all across the board. And so what we're trying to do is get the word out to the community and the leaders in the community as to what the issues are, and then provide a survey to you and others that are listening so that we can get feedback as far as what your priorities are. We're looking at the potential for a tax measure on the ballot in November that where they've put money away over the years to replace these capital type items. So we're dreadfully in need of funds to repair and restore and replace the fire facilities. They are not earthquake safe, and our hope is to have a modern facility sometime in the future here. Additionally, other issues at the fire department have been the inability for us to replace our fire apparatus. Our newest fire engine is 11 years old. Most of you wouldn't drive an 11-year-old vehicle and use that as an emergency response vehicle. Something we use every day to get to fires, traffic accidents, medical aid calls, paramedic assist calls, drownings, whatever you can think of, we use it to respond to that. But our engines are getting old, and there is no debt fund that's being put aside to replace those apparatus. Two of our other fire engines, one's 23 years old. Our ladder truck is 23 years old. So over the next 9 years, we're looking at replacing approximately $1.5 million worth of emergency vehicles. And that's just in the fire department. Every department in the city has similar issues. Somehow we're going to have to plan for that future the immediate need now and plan for replacing these things in the future. Additionally, the City Council and our Ad Hoc Emergency Services Committee identified the need to staff a North Morro Bay Fire Station in an effort to reduce response times to North Morro Bay and also provide extra personnel to respond to those simultaneous incidents that we have. Currently, we're seeing about 230 simultaneous incidents every year. Just the other day, we were running three incidents at once. With three people on duty, that's quite difficult. So oftentimes, we are relying on a tow Navy. In the late 40s, early 50s, it was moved up to the fire station and has been here ever since. Does not have any essential services elements to it. The construction was quite poor, and it did not survive the earthquake. This portion back here, 1980s, it was Sunshine Donut Shop. Moved in there in the mid-80s to facilitate dorms and locker rooms and bathrooms for the firefighters. And this portion over here was a house built in the 1930s. So as you can see, it's just kind of melded all of these different buildings together. Termites are pretty much the only thing holding it together at this time. And in the storms of January of this year, actually, we had failures in the roof on this side here, failures over here and over here, and actually had ceilings collapsing into the bathrooms. We had the light fixtures filling with water. Finally, the City Council said enough's enough, we're going to move out of there. So they've, in an emergency measure, funded our purchasing a modular structure for a temporary fix, and we're going to move across the street. That facility should be on site in about 10 weeks. Some additional concerns as far as our infrastructure, our roads. If you drive around Morro Bay, you're going to see what I mean. The city has been trying to extend the life of the roads by providing a slurry seal, but that just protects the surface, adds a little more life to it. But if you look at the roads and the potholes that develop it, that are developing, the substructure of those roads oftentimes need to be replaced, and the city just doesn't have the funds or the personnel to do that work. We've pretty much put off all maintenance except for emergency work on potholes after storms, and we spend a lot of time chasing those. Here's a good example. Just as you enter Morro Bay, I was taking some photos for this program, and first place I went was the entrance to the city. Most of the city's buildings are in need of repair, the streets. We're not maintaining our bathrooms and public buildings the way we were in the past. The Parks and Rec Department lost positions in last year's budget process. If you go in the bathrooms, you'll see that they're not being cleaned as often down in the Embarcadero. We've reduced the maintenance in our parks. We've reduced the maintenance in the structures. One of the key elements, and the one that should be of importance to this board especially, is the city's inability to take care of the concerns that have come out of the Federal Clean Water Act. The city and all municipalities were required to provide a 7-year plan to reduce pollution into waterways. Currently, the city doesn't have the funds to really do an adequate job. They'd like to put in fossil filters into the inlets of the storm drains and filter out all the oils and fuels and things that drip from vehicles. Right now, it drips on the street. First rain, it all washes into the bay. And here, we're trying to keep that a pristine environment, and we're not doing a real good job right now. Currently, the city has labeled the inlets and said, don't pour oil here, and I think that's helped a little bit. People aren't pouring things in the drains as much as they used to. And we're also using the street sweeper as part of that program to reduce pollution. So it's sweeping, it's getting some oil, some particulate matter, and hydraulic fluids, but it's not getting everything. Additionally, we've cut a number of police officers. In the last year, there's been four members of the police department that have been eliminated, whether it be a code enforcement officer, a police officer. They've had some difficulty with dispatchers as well. So what they're seeing are levels of news up with the expenditures to meet those increasing demands. This is just an example of a couple of those inlets that go into storm drains. A lot of people think those go right to the sewer, but that's a false thought. They go straight to the bay. Here's an example of some of the different organizations working together. Up in the left-hand corner, you can see some of our paramedics and police department working together. Oftentimes, people have mentioned to me, well, police, they just patrol. They do law enforcement occasionally, and they write tickets. But in emergency services, we see them as our partners. They're actually what we see as our first line of defense. The firefighters have a lot of work to do in maintaining their equipment and training for those low-frequency, high-risk events. And they're out in the community doing fire prevention and inspecting businesses and keeping things fire safe. While the police department, they're actually patrolling those neighborhoods. And oftentimes, when an incident is called in to the dispatcher, the police car may be one, two blocks away, and they can be there fairly quickly. Now, they're not paramedics, but they can assess the situation, provide information to the paramedics from the fire department when they arrive, and they can gather critical information, and such as this case here, provide care until those paramedic first responders arrive. Lower left corner, we see a police car. It's a beautiful-looking car. However, like a book, you can't read a book by its cover. The cars look beautiful sometimes, but the workings of them are getting quite tired. A lot of people think, well, 80, 100,000 miles on a police car, why can't you extend the life? Why can't you go further? The reality of it is, again, this is an emergency response vehicle and needs to car. It rests all day. When you come home from work, you park your car, it rests all night. These vehicles are running essentially 24 hours a day. They're not resting. They finish a shift with one police officer and go right into work with another police officer. And when you would normally be parking with your engine off, these engines are often idling, putting more and more hours on those vehicles so that they can be ready to respond. So it's important that we replace those on a regular basis, have a schedule for that. Again, the city currently is not funding that. In the upper right-hand corner, that's just a recent rollover accident on the highway, showing an example of police, fire, ambulance workers all working together for a common goal of a positive outcome here. And these are much more common incidents than you would think. Had a rollover on Main Street yesterday. We had a rollover on South Bay Boulevard on Sunday. We had a truck into a tree on Sunday. And both those accidents and a structure fire all at the same time. Lower right-hand corner, sadly, this is what you often see nowadays when you go to the Parks and Rec Department. Used to be we had a person working in there. You'd walk into the facility, make a reservation of a room or sign up for a class, gather information. Nowadays, you see a sign here, the door's closed, there's nobody there. That person is no longer employed with Parks and Rec. Again, it was downsizing due to the budget issues. Why must we act now? Well, we're getting into a situation, like I was saying, where our revenues are not maintaining pace with the expenditures. One of the reasons is the state of California has taken $7 million from the city in the last 12 years. You know, it sounds like a lot to some people, not enough to another, but that's essentially in our budget, that's $580-some-thousand a year. And that's, the revenues continue to be an issue. We saw a drop after 9-1-1 with tourism, and revenues from sales tax and tourism-based industries dropped there as well. We have been maintaining with the utilization of one-time funds. We kept a couple of police officers by using funds from the skating rink that was sold. We used some funds out of our reserve account to maintain some fire positions and other things in the city. But we can't do that forever. You know, you do those once or twice, that's about it. We need those ongoing revenue sources to maintain our current levels and hope for some increases in the future. So what have we got done? We've forgone those critical repairs of the fire station. We've suspended our street maintenance program. We're down employees in all those street divisions. We've cut funding for infrastructure and repairs, drastically reduced maintenance of public facilities, and again, the police officers have lost positions. So right now we're considering a local funding measure to restore and maintain critical city functions. What that means is the city council will be deciding in July, most likely, whether they should pursue a sales tax increase or not. All the mayors in the county many months ago decided they were going to pursue this altogether. Since that time, the county and Paso Robles have both decided not to pursue the sales tax, as far as I can tell. Paso is very fluid with money and didn't feel the need for that. However, Morro Bay is not in that same situation. So our hope is that we can educate the public on what the issues are, which is what we're doing here today, and then find out the feelings of the community and leaders such as yourself as to what we have been talking about. The fire station, the fire equipment, replacing fire apparatus, trying to staff that North Morro Bay fire station, repairing streets and not just the potholes, meeting the Federal Clean Water Act standards for storm drains, and restoring park maintenance, maintaining our emergency vehicles, and restoring those police officers' positions. So those are the key priorities that we're looking at right now, and we're going to ask you if those are your same priorities, and if you have others, we'd like you to write in and say what those might be, and if you have other ideas for funding. What a half-cent sales tax does to the city, a half-percent sales tax does, it provides essentially $700,000 to $750,000 a year. And that money stays local. We don't have to share it with the county. We don't share it with the schools. We don't share it with the state. Typical property tax, people are saying, well, you know, property values have gone way up. You should be flush with money. Well, the fact of the matter is, out of the 1% sales tax, the city only sees 10% of that money. The other 90% goes to the county, the state, the schools, and other entities. So we aren't seeing the increases that you would think in those areas. So how are we going to keep on track with this money? How are we going to spend it correctly and how the community wants it? The goal there is to have some fiscal accountability by establishing a citizens oversight committee. That committee would look at how those funds are being spent if that tax measure is successful, and make sure that $750,000 isn't going to things that the community doesn't want. So that oversight committee will keep the council focused on those priorities, as will groups such as yours and other citizens in the community. Our community is typically not shy about saying what the priority should be. And I'll leave some here with Rick, and he can pass those out to you. And if you could fill those out, we typically ask for them back right away, but you have a meeting not to carry on. I understand that. So if you could drop those off by the fire station, or actually by Bridget. Bridget's collecting those at City Hall. And that way we can have your opinions on what you believe the priorities should be. If you have other ideas for revenue enhancement, we've heard a lot. We've discussed a lot. But for what we've seen, the most viable option right now is that sales tax increase. So with that, I'll close. And if you have any questions, I'd love to answer those. Thank you.
Okay. Bringing it back to the board. Ed, you wanted to talk first.
Well, not necessarily first, but I do have a question. When they do this and they put it on the ballot, is it legal for them to specify what those that half a percent is going to be used for at that time, or do they have to put it in the general fund?
This is a general fund tax, which would mean that it could be used for anything that the general fund pays for, and that's street departments, fire department, police, public services, anything that's not an enterprise fund. If the council chose to make it specific for one item or two items, such as police or fire or parks and rec, just one of those or two of those, if they're specific, it makes it a two-thirds majority vote, much more difficult measure to pass. So that's where, if we keep it a general tax and rely on community groups and an advisory committee to keep the council focused on the priorities, we'll have a much better chance of passing.
Yeah, I don't, you know. I mean, I agree with the half-cent tax.
I would the gist of that conversation to me was that it's really important for you to get the feedback with the forms. We are facing a crisis in the general fund, to some extent the harbor fund, in our infrastructure, deferred capital projects, streets. I mean, how long can you defer a street program? This is really important to all of you. And everybody has things that they think it should go to. I hear a lot of times, you know, we want to make sure it doesn't go to salaries or, you know, or wasted on administrative costs and things like that. Well, we need that input. I mean, that needs to be written down and given to us and continuing oversight, because it's important to address the needs that you all want to see. So I would offer, too, to help. If you can fill out those forms, give them to the office. If you even want to just fill one out over the phone with us, we'll fill one out for you. If you can fill it out yourself, that's great. Drop it with Bridget or the fire department and continue the oversight.
Okay. Roger?
Yeah, I think, Mike, that it's important that the community get a chance to vote on this. Raising taxes is tough, and if it goes on the ballot, the community will basically be making a decision of whether they want the high level of service that was provided a few years ago, or they're willing to accept a continuing decline in the level of service. And I got to participate in budget sessions many years, and at times I had to make some of those tough decisions during downturns. But the state takeaways don't seem to be going away. And given the governor's ambitious program of state infrastructure repair 10 years ago, I made the prediction, even though we had the highest water rates in the county for a short time after state water came in, I think we're about the median, and after, you know, the pipeline goes into Nacimiento, it's going to be even lower. We were forward-thinking, and it was economical, and with street repair and other things, you know, to let it go is difficult, but I think that the community needs to decide what level of service they want, and, of course, with sales tax, our visitors get to help foot the bill instead of it being as a property tax where just a portion of the community pays for it and everybody uses it. Our visitors use those things and they get to help in a big way pay the bill.
Gene?
Earlier you mentioned the property tax, and you really meant a percentage of the property tax stays in Morro Bay, not sales tax, right?
Correct. If I said sales tax, I meant property tax.
And that's what I heard.
Yeah, not 90% of the property tax goes to state, county, right, and schools.
And then by any chance, would you happen to know how much a percentage of sales tax is from out of the area, of people from out of the area? Is there anybody that's determined?
A third of it. Two-thirds is from local citizens, and a third comes from tourism. People visiting the city, not necessarily tourists, but other people coming to the community and spending dollars.
And then my last little comment is, I've personally crawled all through your fire station, in the attic, everywhere, and it needs to be torn down and replaced.
Jim?
Mic on? Sorry.
The future doesn't look very great for having increasing revenues over the next few years, 10 years, 15 years. Is the sales tax going to be enough to do all of this and increase services? I don't think so. Somehow the public is going to either have to accept a reduction in services in order to spend less money, or they're going to be continuing raising taxes, and then there comes a limit on that as well. So some of these emergency things, shouldn't the budget be thinking ahead and putting at least some monies away so that when it comes time to make the big investment, they have a fund to get started with?
That's desirable, but in the current budget situation and in the previous several years, there is no money to put aside.
And there's no money from the state, and the people don't have any money.
The way we balanced the budget last year essentially was eliminating programs and personnel, and so there really is currently no extra.
May I add something? You know, along those lines, the 7.25% sales tax that's collected now, only 1% comes back to the city, correct?
Correct.
All the rest goes to the county and state. So a 0.5% increase that would all stay in the city would be a significant bump upward. It's a small percentage of the sales tax that's collected, but it's a big.
Jim,
let me ask then, why only 1% of the existing sales tax stays local? What's to keep that 0.5% increase from going elsewhere too?
Well, I don't have all the answers for that. I know that the 7.25% that is currently being charged is the lowest in the state. There are other places that have the same as us, but it is the lowest in the state. If you look at Santa Barbara County, they're at 7.75. Areas north actually are quite higher. Some are above 8%. But as far as the law or the mandate that says, you know, that new 0.5% stays in the city, I can't put my finger specifically to that law, but I've been assured by people in the know that that money stays local. Finance director said that. The agency that we've hired to help investigate the issue has stated that as well, and they've done this several times in other communities.
I guess it's up to me now. Mike, First of all, we're going to, if this thing continues on, we'll have an election, and this will be put before the voters. And assuming that, the voters say yes, does that automatically become a 7 3/4, or does the, do we now have to go back to the county and ask them to impose that?
No, it, once our citizens vote to approve it, then it's approved.
So we're the deciders, as somebody
correct.
Once said.
Correct.
Let's see. Are we going to put some sort of a sunset clause on this? In other words, it never gets out. So is there going to be some sort of a sunset clause?
Well, the measure has not been written yet. The council will decide to pursue it or not in July. Once they decide to pursue it, then it can be on the ballot for November. But as far as what the actual measure will look like, I don't know at this time. That has been brought up before. In our discussions, we don't see the need for that money ever going away. So the benefit of a sunset wouldn't be there for the city. But if that's something that the citizens are interested in, it's important to have on that survey so the council knows how to write that measure.
So that if someone feels that there should be a sunset clause, then the little questionnaire that you are giving out, and that we'll be making it available, I'm assuming that the citizens can pick one of these up at City Hall?
People that have seen this program can come by the fire station. I can provide a form for them and have them fill that out so we can have their feedback as well. Mm-hmm. The intent is also to have a mail-out survey in the not-too-distant future that will go to all the voters.
Possibly through the water bill?
I'm not sure how they'll get it out, but it'll go out to all the registered voters, and you'll have an opportunity to more specifically show your priorities. Right now, we just want you to check a box.
Mm-hmm.
In that one, it would be more specific where you may rank them one through whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, just knowing, looking at some of the holes in the streets and looking at what we need in the way of our fire department. Item 4-2, assessment of current harbor services and development of a harbor strategic plan. This is continued from March and April. And so we are now in your packet. There is a letter, and it's entitled Harbor Advisory Letter to Morro Bay City Council. I also gave an errata to that letter, and what we need to do now is look at it from possibly one of perhaps three different possibilities. One, we can throw the letter out and say it's not worth it. One, we can accept it or accept the one that is the errata. Or we can now take, at this point in time, go through and change anything we want to change. I'll ask for people to make their opinions known. Gene?
Don, first off, I think I have to apologize to you and to our subcommittee group for not getting a letter back to you and the group.
No problem.
I had written one letter and was so frustrated with it, I hit the delete button. But there are several things in your letter that I do like. I quickly put some notes beyond there here. I think our working waterfront represents America at its core. It's individuals working hard for freedom of their actions, achievable goals. This is what America is. I mean, you guys can go out and do your own thing and earn a living and be respectful. And as was explained to me a number of years ago, a commercial fisherman will come up to a rock pile and he can just spend so much time on it. He's got to move on because he's got equipment, he's got time. Where a sport fisherman will continue to pick at that particular rock pile until there's nothing left. So between the commercial fishermen and the sport fishermen, our fishing industry has, our fishing stocks have been declining, in most likely in our area here. And I agree that a lot of the environmental concerns are legitimate. But I think that we need to have some kind of win-win situation or scenario where both parties can come together and develop a vanguard or a plan for our future. I really like your ideas in your letter here. That two of the things is I believe that we need to probably at some point along the line here bring in a consultant that's well respected, well recognized, that will take these two issues, these two sides, and evaluate them and help develop a plan for Morro Bay. The other issue that I really support here is I think that we need to develop some kind of marine research facility. I've been involved with several kind of researches along the waterfront here and in the ocean, and there's been lots of research done that just gets stuck on shelves and both sides. And there seems to be some kind of a need for a clearinghouse where we can continue to come back. And I feel as though if we have the sand crabs right off of the rock, just north of the rock, maybe a quarter of a mile, have the most parasites in all of California, which is kind of concerning to me. So I think that's just kind of an example. We do need to be aware of what our situation here is. So I support most of this letter, and I like your changes here.
Are you suggesting any changes?
No, not at this point.
Would you have looked at both the original one in the packet and the one with the errata?
Yes, correct.
Would you support the latter or the former?
I like the changes you've added on the latter here.
Okay. So you would support the latter without changes?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to go to you, Lynn, for next. We left you out to last time, so.
I like the new one. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit shorter. I think some of the redaction in it has made great improvement. It's much easier to read and therefore is much more convincing. I think having or emphasizing
microphone.
The fact after all that.
Got to start over.
You have to start over now.
I like version number 2, the latest version. I think that you have made it a bit shorter. I think the redaction is much clearer in it, which makes it easier, quicker to read, and much more convincing. And I think emphasizing the fact that we need to know what's going on and that we need more studies that are good studies to find out.
So he's probably going to think it's okay.
On the contrary.
I do think that the letter in its most current form is fine. But beyond the little changes that I made, I think Don, being the only member on the committee that showed up, did a great job in condensing it from the 8 pages that we looked at last month to a manageable size letter. I think it does condense it in a way that it leaves virtually nothing out in terms of major points. It makes recommendations. It does the kinds of things that I thought after reading the 8-page letter ought to be included, and I think it does it well. So I am in favor of this last edition of the letter.
Okay. I'm going to go to your last, or next to last. Ed.
Well, I see nothing wrong with the letter as it is. I wouldn't mind adding a paragraph. I'd like to check on the sales tax on fuel. I'm not sure what the status is, and I haven't bought any marine fuel in quite a while. But to find out if they're still charging sales tax. And we used to get it back, off our tax returns later on, but I don't think that's the case now. And I think they charge tax right when they sell the fuel, and maybe the state could exempt that for a while until the fisheries got back on their feet. But we'll see. I'd like to have some kind of a paragraph that suggests that. But we better check and see what the status is on that first.
Okay. Rick, is that we recommend that be reinstated. Could we do that without too much trouble?
Yeah, I think so. So what you're suggesting that is if tax-exempt fuel sold to commercial fisheries?
more or less.
And because you used to pay it in the price of the fuel and then get reimbursed for it later.
Well, 15 years ago, so I can't exactly. They changed the rules on that quite a while ago. I'm not sure exactly when it was, but I can tell you this, that since the price of fuel goes up, since the tax is a percentage of sales tax is, then it adds up to a chunk.
My understanding of the fuel price now was with the tax-exempt status.
It could be. I don't know. I haven't bought any fuel in 3 or 4 years. But
for the commercial?
Well, there's no road tax on marine fuel.
Yeah, and that's what I meant.
But there is sales tax on it, I think.
Oh, well,
so, and that's
I'm
different.
Not familiar enough, but I can check into it and see if something.
I'd like to check it and see anyway, find out.
What I'm suggesting is that perhaps, and I'll ask the board for concurrence if they'll go along with it. But if, you know, we are part of our this letter says that we want to see what we can do to help our commercial fishermen weather this crisis, and this may be one of the methods of if there is some way to reduce the cost of the fuel by reimbursing it, if there is a sales tax. And if we could somehow get that sales tax reimbursed to the commercial fishermen, then maybe a short paragraph.
Sure, if we can put some in.
I can put it in myself if you want, but it doesn't look like a big one.
All I was thinking was that you're suggesting a strategy right now.
Okay. Let's drop this one for just a few minutes. Jim?
May I just raise this point in the front page here under the reasons for this letter. Then are item B says failing in that what interim help can be provided for our fishermen to see them through the crisis. That could be a place where this idea, as an example, could be
as
put.
An example. Yeah.
E or even C.
No, I think I'd agree with Jim that perhaps it would be under B. They would say, as an example, perhaps. Okay.
May I comment, too? And another letter that I handed out to you tonight and is available for the public at the podium is a letter from the Western Fishboat Operators Association, and they're concerned, very concerned about fuel price. And I know most of you may not have a chance to read this letter yet, but they're suggesting that at the end is that something basically needs to be done to try to work on fuel prices. So we're in a big area here. I'm not sure how the answer is, but fuel costs are a huge issue, as described in this letter, for the albacore fleet, for the salmon fleet right now. So how the program might be done, I mean, they're basically in this letter suggesting some kind of subsidized fuel costs or something to sustain the fleets. There may be a lot of different ways to skin the cat as the issue develops.
Yeah, I've seen that.
No, I wanted to fill it ahead.
No, it has a copy of it. Then why don't we...
First letter that carried over to the second one. Third paragraph from the bottom on the first page. I think it needs to say colleges and universities, not collages, yeah. although some of the fish closure maps looked like somebody was just putting a collage together. And then on the next page, in the middle of the second paragraph, we do need to access these stocks, but I think that we want to assess these stocks.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I did this sort of late at night.
No, it's a beautiful letter. I'm not a good speller myself, and I just picked those up because would change the meaning quite a bit.
My spell checker picked it up, but it's, you know, that was an honest word. It just didn't fit. Okay, with those changes, I'm not going to say anything about my letter. I think it's a wonderful letter.
I make a motion we approve it.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right.
Don?
Yeah.
Are we going to then, well, we can agendize, I guess, later, a discussion about fuel prices when we can find out more about the taxes and following up on this other letter?
I think maybe we could put it on our next agenda item and as a separate item that we can look at this this letter that Rick gave us, study it.
Format or a letter format with each individual signing?
Oh, that's right. We do need to address that. I put the signatures in there, sign for the Harbor Advisory Board or a list of those members who support the letter. I would suggest that this be a letter from the Harbor Advisory Board since it was a unanimous vote. Would that be acceptable?
Letter format, not individually signed, just
right.
From the Harbor Advisory Board. Okay.
And you might point that it was the, you know, well, it'll be in the minutes that the letter was accepted unanimously.
Yes, very much so. And then, of course, we will send it off to the individual council members. It's a letter to the city council.
Mm-hmm.
One would assume that they will make a decision themselves whether they how they would react to that, whether they just take the information, whether they choose to schedule for city council public hearing or action, or whether they choose to ask you to take further action. So there is undoubtedly some input we may get back from the city council. And then I understand also that you probably would like to follow this up in future meetings, at least on fuel issues. And I think that's a really good thing. I mean, it would be not a good idea for us to just drop the subject and think we're done once we write the letter. I know none of you do, but we do need to, you know, keep monitoring the situation and develop our ideas here.
Gene?
Don, could we have Rick look into, say, alternative fuels at the same time, biodiesel, that sort of thing? Is that too much of a...
We don't give direction to the harbor director.
It reported, I think, in the status report, is on the council agenda for June 12th. So that can be part of the discussion, too, the fuel dock situation, overall fuels, and maybe some more work we can do on alternative fuels for the, you know, at least the Darby at Verge's Landing is very interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, you know, there's a mixed bag and concerns out there, too, about a lot of issues, too. So fuel sounds like a subject for August.
Yeah, sounds like it. Jim.
It seems to me a number of years ago, Ed, that it wasn't just the sales tax on fuel, but the sales tax on any item purchased that went directly and applied directly to the boat or to the gear and that sort of thing that was exempt.
What that was, like if you went to Giannini's and you bought something there for a commercial boat, if it was attached to the boat, it was tax-free. If it was not attached to the boat, such as fuel or such as a tool, then there can be tax on it. And that was the difference there.
So the exclusion for the tax, the fuel-related tax, was a different item?
It was a different, separate thing. Yeah. Are
they still exempt from paying sales tax on
items of tax to a commercial vessel, yes, commercial fishing vessel.
Okay. They still have that exemption?
As far as I know.
Okay. Additional comments? We're okay with that. Then we'll move on from item 4-2 and move to 4-3, beach signage. Rick, would you introduce this?
Sure. If you pardon me, too, I'd like to just read it. It's fairly short. The beach signage, this item was put an additional sign down toward 41, too. But for most part, they're older and need replacement. They're not in great conditions, those warning signs, the smaller warning signs along the revetment in the pit area. Regulatory signs are posted at the beach access of the Rock parking lot, the pit, the north side of Morro Creek, the pit and the north side of Morro Creek. Regulatory signs have been added as regulations were adopted and can use updating and consolidation there. They're kind of sitting on odd sort of conglomeration of poles and have been put up as time went by. Now we're in the process, apparently, too. We read first, the council passed for first reading a no smoking on the beach ordinance. And if that's adopted in second reading, obviously we'll need to post some additional regulatory signs. So this is a good opportunity, it looks like, to something we've been wanting to do and to consolidate our regulatory signs, make them modern, and hopefully improve the poles that they're on. So the recommendation is that the City Council budget up to $6,000 next year for sign improvements on the waterfront, and that is included in our budget recommendation to the City Council. Our concept is to leave the changing station sign in place, which is sort of a unique sign, acquire new signage similar to the recently placed at State Park Beach and the state parks, where they've been putting up signs recently, I think because of citizen input they've been getting, and those are warning about beach hazards. Regarding beach and swimming hazards, and post them in approximately 6 locations from the Rock parking lot to Highway 41 beach access. So we would put up beach hazard warning signs, similar to state parks warning signs, get brand new ones made, and put them up in 6 locations from Highway 41 along the all the way along the Rock revetment.
Sure. I was, I guess, the squeaky wheel that got the state park beach signage put up, and I think that anything the city can do to augment that, you know, and educate people about the rip currents is helpful. I think that one of the gentlemen who assisted in the rescue, did he ever talk to you? His company wanted to provide some funding for assisting the city with the beach signage. He and I played phone tag. We never connected directly. I suggested he talk to you, but I'll see if I can follow up on that. I'm sure that Mike Pond has a... He was one of the gentlemen in the picture in the paper who was given the commendation. So his name's pretty easily available in the company he works for. To honor him and his participation, wanted to help with that. And I'm sure that you could spend that money somewhere else in your budget if indeed his company would help in part with that. So I'll talk to you after the meeting on that, but I think that it's important to do this. The hazards on the beach, we all who grow up on the beach learn about rip currents, and you know it's just like driving on icy roads if you live in the snow country. It's something that you learn about, but the visitors who aren't used to it are the ones who have the problem generally, and so it's important.
Okay. Ed? No.
Fine with me if they want to do that.
Jim?
I just support in general the idea of keeping signs current and updated and attractive looking. And all.
Yeah, that's an engineer. Got to watch out for the engineers.
Well, okay. we ought to have a level somewhere. I think we could probably fix that one.
Okay, I guess it's back to me. I hadn't noticed, of course, I haven't been down to the beach lately, but my wife, not too long ago, said, she was just sort of livid that here are people dying in the surf, and if you walk down from our house, which is up in North Morro Bay, through the little campground, you find there was a great big sign that says, no dogs, don't go in here because of snowy plovers, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. But there was nothing there that said anything about, look out, you might get drowned.
Now there is.
But now there is. I really thank somebody for that. Okay, basically it sounds like this is a no-brainer, but maybe I shouldn't have said that. Do we as a Harbor Advisory Board wish to support this recommendation from the staff to the City Council and join in and say we also recommend the same thing?
Where's the money coming from, our Harbor budget?
It's in there. It's in the Harbor Fund budget recommended to the council.
It probably is coming out of the Harbor Fund. Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second that we, the Harbor Advisory Board, will join with staff in recommending to the City Council that a budget up to $6,000 for the next year, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, as said in this memo.
And then Roger will follow up on the
right.
Who made that motion? Roger.
Roger made the motion. It was seconded by Jim.
Yes. Thank you.
And we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion, further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous. All right. Now we come to the really interesting part. Beg your pardon. The budget, FY06-07, which is very near and dear to Rick. Doesn't think it's boring. Rick thinks it's very important, which it is.
It is.
Rick, would you introduce the subject?
Yes. At your last meeting, we provided you the list of capital projects that we were recommending to City Council because the detailed budget sheets weren't available at that time. They've subsequently, a draft budget has been produced. In this packet tonight, you have all the detail, including additionally the $130,000 in capital projects shown as one area, but the rest of the detail, salaries, supplies, interfund transfers, transfer to capital improvement programs, on and on. This budget, draft budget, was reviewed as the part of all this all city funds budget workshop last week. The council indicated that they canceled their tentative budget workshop for tonight and requested that the budget be again scheduled for consideration at their next council meeting on June 12th. So I don't have any changes to report to you at this time from any of the recommendations we made to the City Council. I would at best anticipation I would have is that they didn't see an overall revenues of about 1.6. Let's see here. It's the summary sheet is on about the third page in, and revenues are estimated at $1,649,000. Expenses are estimated at $1,643,000, so there'd be a slight surplus of $5,000 in our recommended budget. And I think I'd just like to ask for questions on specific areas if there are any.
Okay. By the way, this is the Harbor Department's budget, and I believe that Rick is asking us for input and recommendations, not approval. Okay, so we'll start with Lynn.
Don't start
with me. Jean.
Under your new service objective, you're asking for a 5-year lease site inspection program. Is that correct?
Yes.
And is that done by the fire department or in conjunction with the fire department or... I mean, we just heard from the fire department they don't have any money.
Yeah. Well, this has got a couple of ways that it may help a little bit. We have included this. We have been doing this periodically since the early 1990s, and, in fact, it was done before I arrived by a gentleman named John Wallace, an engineering firm, in the 80s. And we tried to do it through the 90s, approximately every 5 years. When we adopted the lease management policy, we actually put it in the lease. When we did it, we kind of lucked into finding a fire department reserve. Well, excuse me, actually, the last two times we've actually had assistance in it from people who were working for the city as temporary employees. George Reese did it as a fire department reserve in approximately... would have been about 96, I think, and then we had assistance from a police department employee in the last one we did in 2000. In this case, again, I spoke to the fire department and asked them if they had some folks who would be interested in helping and if we could then reimburse the fire department costs for completing the, since we have the format and it's a matter of doing inspections, and they were delighted to incorporate it into their fire inspection program. So what we've done is we budgeted $12,000. We will reimburse that, and they've shown a revenue item in the fire department budget of $12,000. So it's in essence going to be a transfer from the Harbor Fund to the General Fund. So it assists in some of the, defraying in some ways General Fund costs. And they feel like they can provide us a service very cost efficiently. They have very qualified people to do this. In fact, George Reese now is a permanent employee of the department. He probably will be involved with the fire inspection program, and then we can generate the reports for our lease site inspection at the same time. So that's the way it'll work.
A couple other questions that maybe you can explain to me. Under your supplies, we have listed down under fuel, oil, and lubricant, you have $13,000 budgeted. Do you feel as though that's going to be adequate in the next coming year?
fuel use a little bit, actually, over in recent years. We seem to be running the boats a little bit less. I don't know if that's because of the use of PWCs or there's less boating activities or whatever. But the costs have gone up substantially.
All right. So, next question. Under services, we have 10,500 listed for legislative analysis.
Yes.
And then we have 20,000 in consulting services.
The 10,500 is a fee we have been paying to E. Dell Smith for dredging lobbying in Washington, D.C. for about 10 years. So that item has been the same for about 10 years. The 20,000 consulting is an area where I am, for example, charging now a construction management service that I'm using on the ice machine and other city projects on our state park marina, a lady named Marsha Walter. And so that's where I'm using consulting services. It basically assists us in specialized services.
And then I see under, on an accounts receivable, I guess promotion and advertising, 4,000. I wonder whether we need that. And then lost revenue of 45,000. I guess those are my concerns.
Lost reserves.
Yes.
Lost reserves. Would you like me to address that? The promotion account, you may notice that it was 1,500 last year. We, for some time, actually, and if you don't mind, I'll revisit even more history on the promotion account. I have always advocated that since a vast majority of our revenues come from lease site rents, and that is, at this time, I think it's about $1.2 million out of the $1.65 million total. A marketing association or a tenants association on the Embarcadero possibly defray some costs or develop some programs. That marketing association never took off and, in fact, I think has kind of died. And the Embarcadero Merchants Association has not been real active in recent years. Now, as a sidebar to that, there's a group that has been meeting that appears to want to revive that. And so I would argue again with you and the City Council that this is an area we should look at. I mean, we're relatively unique in that we are almost, you know, partners with our businesses down here, and they pay the bills. And I think that it is incumbent on us to try to do something. Now, the other side of that coin is obviously the city has a promotion. The city generally has a promotions committee. We fund a lot of promotions activity directly through that. We fund visitor service. So there is areas where we are doing a lot as a city, in my opinion, even though many people feel we're never doing enough. And that's a current argument that's going on with the city. But that's where that came from. Now, about 4 years ago, maybe, and hopefully you won't hold me to exact dates, but when shortly after the 4th of July event started, because we weren't using those promotion funds on what it was originally intended, we actually made a contribution to the 4th of July event from the Harbor Fund of $2,400. We were doing that for the last 3 or 4 years. Last year, when we developed our budget, we were asked, along with everybody else, and prior to receiving the Duke outfall money, which made a big difference in our revenues this year, we were forced to look at cutting expenses. So you'll see that last year there was only $1,500. We actually took that, because that is a relatively unique event that does not charge folks and does draw a lot of people to the waterfront. So hopefully I answer your question. If you've got any more questions on that, the loss reserves is an area for to set aside money for potential litigation.
Okay. Jim?
On the new services in regards to the lease site inspections, my understanding then, for example, using the yacht club as an example, the fire inspection would be on the building itself, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, well, all the improvements, we will try to look at the docks and, all the improvements on the site.
Okay. A couple of questions just for my own understanding mostly. On what page is it? It's got 315 on it. Department summary.
Okay. It's about four pages in.
Debt and aid to outside agencies. And then further back,
there's a DW, a DW, a DBW debt service for $135. I'm just curious what that is.
Can I see what that is? That's a can of worms right there.
Yeah.
is there an easy explanation?
Oh,
for
yeah,
it?
It's, yeah, okay. It's pretty easy.
Why don't you let me do it? Because
okay.
it basically what happened was the T pier burnt down to do the debt service on that. See? And also, we, the harbor, are responsible for the cost to maintain Tidelands Park. It's like Jane said, it's a can of worms.
Well, with all due respect, I have a slightly different history. So perhaps you can take my history and Don's and decide which one you
sure.
like. But we borrowed $2 million from the Department of Boating and Waterways, and it was quite remarkable that we got an expedited loan because at that point the insurance had not been paid off on the South T Pier. We were still battling over the insurance and what we would get paid. And I think this was 91 when they authorized the loan. We made a commitment to reconstruct the pier, and I think that was about $1.4 million. And we got $1 million settlement on the insurance of the South T Pier. We went ahead and spent the money to reconstruct the pier, and we also went ahead and spent $700,000 about on our local cost share for the Corps of Engineers. We gap funded what was unfunded in Tidelands Park at the time. My memory was about $300,000 that was, we were stuck with. Tidelands Park was dirt at the time, as most of you will remember, and used as an overflow lot, and we had these beautiful plans to build a park there, but we had about a $750,000 project and about $400,000 in grants. So the Harbor Fund paid for that gap with some of the all this money. And we also used the remainder of the South T Pier loans to principal and interest payments amount to $134,000 a year. I think we're in the 11th or 12th year. We have about 18 more years to make that payment.
Thank you.
It was pretty close to the same.
Yeah,
it's just a little different order.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have one more question of a similar nature, I guess. there's a budget item, interfund transfers for $198,084. And then back on interfund transfers, that $198,084 is referred to as overhead cost allocation. And I don't understand either of those.
You want to answer that one, Donald?
No.
I might not correct you on that, or I might not try to correct you. That is the overhead allocation. That's based on a study that the city did initially in the mid-90s to look at costs that the general fund incurs in management of the harbor fund. And examples of that are payroll services that are provided by the general fund for harbor fund personnel, finance, preparing the budget that is done by the finance, accounts payables, a whole list of finance services, just supervisory issues of, say, city manager having to supervise me. Those are relatively small costs, but they're included in there. The large bulk of costs are facilities management and parks maintenance for facilities that are in the Tidelands.
17% of the city administrator's budget comes from us, or used to. That was what it was about 4 or 5 years ago. That's what he billed us for. On space rental here, what space does the Harbor Department rent? $3,000. It's on page 320.
We rent the little office from Chuck Marcial.
Oh, that. Okay. Yeah. All right. I didn't know you were still renting that over there.
Yeah, we're still using that. It's half storage, half office, half conference room. Multitasking.
Okay.
Any more, Ed?
No, I've forgotten about that. I'm done.
Lynn, no. Very well.
What's adjourned?
Let's see. I did have something that I was going to. Probably wasn't worth. Okay. We have the proposed budget. You have all heard it and have had a chance to take a look at it. Do you wish to support the harbor director? If that's the case, then I would entertain a motion. The motion would be something similar to the Harbor Advisory Board supports the Harbor Director in submitting his budget for FY, what is it, 6 and 7?
15. I move that the Harbor Advisory Board support the Harbor Department's proposed budget for fiscal year 2006-2007 as it has been presented to us.
What do you think, guys? Item 4-5, cancellation of the July 6, 2006 meeting. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No, just for fun.
Oh, okay. we went through that one real quick. I just don't think we need to spend an awful lot of time. The reason, just for the people who are listening, that we are not all that cavalier. The July 6th falls 2 days after July 4th, which is I'm a mathematician, so I can figure that out.
You planning to having the 5th on the 4th?
I was going to do that, okay. But Cinco de Mayo came on the 5th this year, so it was okay. So we're going to stick with this. Anyhow, it's so close to the 4th of July that we just know people are not going to be around, and so we just cancel the July meeting. And we have done so for a number of years. Okay, that ended. We go into item 5, information items.
We included our quarterly newsletter, and I think usually I don't cover it because most of you hopefully read it. I'd be happy to answer questions about the newsletter. I would like to say that Susan Lichtenbaum does this newsletter pretty much by herself, and it's really quite remarkably good.
Mm-hmm. It is a good job.
And oftentimes, you know, it's a big task, and it's just one of the many things she does for us. Did you plan to the Ocean Protection Council? That was included for your info.
I have read that letter, and I would recommend strongly that you read it carefully. There's a lot of good information in there. I saw a hand go up.
I had a question on Thank you. I have a question on the discharge of sewage in the waters of Morro Bay. It says pump out facilities are located at South T Pier, Morro Bay Yacht Club, Tidelands Park Dock, and the Morro Bay Marina. Is that the one that I'm familiar with?
And you're referring to the Morro Bay Marina?
Yes,
they do have a pump out equipment.
Yes, they
do. It is just not usable.
Yes, it is.
And under most conditions. Oh, it is?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And it is used.
Okay.
But it does need some attention.
Okay.
Well, it needs a switch and it needs a hose. I don't know what happened to the hose that used to be there, but it's no longer there. I also saw that, where is it? It's up at the park. Tidelands
Park, yeah.
You know, in the restrooms there, it says, keep our bay clean and you can find a pump out station, and it mentions the fuel dock.
Yeah, that's what we're going to have to change that because I know the fuel dock. I'm sorry. You may have been, you're referring probably to the one down the fuel dock that you say it was there and is not operable at this time.
It does operate, but it needs some attention. The
right.
one at the Wood Bayfront Marina?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because there is one of our backup. I mean, it's not a preferred location for a couple of reasons. The preferred location, I think the most commonly used one, is at Tidelands Park, and now the Yacht Club is getting good use, and that's been a great addition. I'm going to thank the Yacht Club again for doing that. Unfortunately, we provided that equipment to Bayfront Marina and the fuel dock through a grant program about 10 years ago, And I know that it has not been used and not become, and maybe now become inoperable, or at least in a situation where it's not being properly maintained, and we need to work on that. So that would be a good location to have one. The pier isn't the best way to have it, and so the current setup, as you know, most people would prefer not to go up to Wood Pier with their vessels. They would prefer to go to a floating dock. So we've tended to focus our attention on making sure that we keep the Tidelands Park, and we worked with the Yacht Club to try and get that facility up. And I, you know, I guess I could take your input. I'd be appreciative. I think that for the most part we serve the needs of folks, and we do have a program and a project we're still trying to work up with the money that we're going to, the National Estuary Program is going to receive from CMC funds to work up a mobile pump out barge or some kind of mobile barge or mobile equipment that could be put on a boat. And that just, unfortunately, with all that's been going on with the Back Bay Marina and just everything, all the normal fires, we haven't gotten to solving that problem yet. But so the gist of this is, if we're not meeting the needs and there's a problem with the facilities we have now, we need to know it. Otherwise, we haven't, you know, that would really step up trying to get these other ones in service. But so far as I know, we are taking care of the needs. So what Gene is referring to is the vessel that was shown on the front page of the Tribune and featured in an article. It is one of the Windy Cove boats. And I think we, you know, maybe that one's worth reading just real quickly, because on the Back Bay update on the back of the newsletter, I'm going to read that maybe for the audience as much as anything. The Department of Fish and Game, in conjunction with the Morro Bay NEP, is making substantial progress on elimination of illegally moored boats and mooring gear in the Back Bay area. Vessels in the area were given a deadline of December 31, 2005, with some receiving an extension to March 31, 2006 to remove their vessels from Fish and Game Wildlife Area. At this time, of the initial 30 vessels in the area, there are 8 remaining. The Sheriff's Dive Team, working under the DFG and NEP, began pulling up and removing mooring gear and tackle this the week of May 15th. The DFG is actively working on removal of the remaining vessels, including the Voyager. The process will take time to complete due to the complexities of identifying the responsible owner, following legal guidelines regarding abandoned vessels, and ensuring cleanup and boat removal are done in a safe manner. Now, after we wrote this, last Sunday morning we discovered the Voyager had sunk. Or at least was sort of at the waterline. Depending on the tide, it was trying to sink or not floating anymore. So it was, the boom was put around it. The material, there was a lot of loose material, and that was gathered up. This is a Fish and Games project, but we have been assisting greatly, and we continue to assist them greatly, and I think they're doing a great job. They now have to get clearance from the legal folks, and there are. We'll assist, yes. And it kind of depends on the method they choose, and there's a couple of different ones floating around. At a minimum, I'm sure we'll go out there and stand by, move the boat, or assist moving the boat. Whether the boat's taken out in the launch ramp and trailered off for demolishing in another location, or craned off and demolished here somehow, it will depend on our extent.
A Viking funeral is not an option.
I don't even think I'll ask what you had in mind. But we hope to be, and we have been assured we will be, and reimbursed for all our costs out of the funds made available to the NEP from the CMC fines. And it's just part of our job anyway, to something we do all the time, to try and keep the bay clean.
Yeah, Dean Heilman is on the job, and he's doing pretty
good. He's doing a great job, and I have to put in a plug for Chuck Rawlinson and the Sheriff's Dive Team. Chuck Rawlinson, as a private business depth perception, working through the Sheriff's Dive Team, has been very, very helpful, as always, out there pretty much doing volunteer time on his part, cleaning up the moorings. A lot of the moorings are cleaned up now. There were the old abandoned moorings, and we're down to just a few boats, but those are the hard cases. Mm-hmm. You know, they may be there a while. It takes work.
Voyager will.
Did CMC just have another spill in this last rainstorm?
Yeah, I was informed there was a 20,000-gallon sewage spill on that big rainstorm of the weekend. But the good news with CMC is that they've replaced the trunk line, I guess. They're in a major, you know, renovation of their sewage treatment plant, and it's been delayed overall, but they hope to have the treatment plant facility completely redone and upgraded by fall, October, I guess, is the current date. And that should curtail or totally eliminate these spills.
Rick, I would like to ask you, if you will. You included in our packet a letter from Mike Chrisman of the California Ocean Protection Council. Would you please explain what that organization is, and also, since I see your name listed here as a member of it, what the Fishing Heritage Group is?
Okay. So the letter was to Mike Chrisman, who's the chair of the Ocean Protection Council. Mr. Chrisman is also the secretary of the Resources Agency in the state. He's a governor's appointee. That's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, department in the state. The Resources Agency includes the Coastal Commission, the Coastal Conservancy, the Fish and Game Department, Department of Boating and Waterways. I'm leaving a bunch out, but a lot of departments that we're concerned about. Mr. Chrisman has been here. Some of you may have met him, but he was here when they announced the Marine Life Protection Act initiative, implementation initiative, 2 years ago, two summers ago, at the Fish and Game Commission meeting. So the letters to the Ocean Protection Council, as he chairs now, the Ocean Protection Council was set up by special legislation called the Ocean Protection Act, I believe in 2004. That Ocean Protection Act was an extension of the governor's ocean protection or ocean initiative, I think it was called. And that was a response to the Pew and National Ocean Commission's report, which claimed that there was a crisis in the oceans. And at least the Pew Commission report did. The National Oceans Commission was a little more moderate. But the state could react to these national reports and change our management overall for our coastal areas. And that, out of that plan, the legislature reacted with the Ocean Protection Act. It set up this council, which I think describes, well, it may not describe it here, but the council, I believe, is Terry Tamminen of the EPA. I'm forgetting. A member of the legislature, I think there's five members altogether. The Ocean Protection Council may very well, it's just an organization that is setting up right now. It's not totally clear, as these things go, exactly what their role will be, but many of us assume that they will play a very major role in our ocean management in the future. They are currently hiring staff, an executive policy director, a science director, and the governor is very interested in how the Ocean Protection Council goes forward. They also have just recently developed a strategic plan. They will be meeting in Monterey next week to adopt their strategic plan. They had a comment period that was open on their draft, and we responded with this letter to their draft. And you can see by the tone of it that we felt that many of the fishing issues that are important to communities, that it was very strong on protection. And it is, and frankly, they are oriented toward protection. And that's a good thing. But we also felt that there was maybe some places where they had not considered some of the issues that are also important to us here in this community, such as, and there's a broad group signing that, such as sustainable fisheries and fishing businesses. So I went on at length. But the Fishing Heritage Group is sort of a unique group of environmentalists.
That's my comment.
I want to go home. Any additional comments? Future agenda items? I know we have the one with a follow-up to the strategic plan that we were discussing earlier, the fuel considerations along those lines. Any other suggestions for? Yeah.
One of the items that we that was discussed in the Harbor Advisory letter that we talked about earlier was lobbying to have an extensive socioeconomic study. And that caused me to think that some time ago, maybe two-plus years ago, I was sitting as an audience to this Harbor Advisory Board, and there was a woman who was a PhD in anthropology or something that was doing a socioeconomic study resulting from the closures to commercial fishing, and I'm wondering if there was ever anything came of that study.
Yeah, that was Monica Hunter, and she came to the board, I think maybe twice even, presenting.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
She had prepared And in fact, there was a pretty good baseline socioeconomic study that was done up in Moss Landing, paid for by mostly by the County of Monterey. And that got most of us thinking that that would be a good tool for here. Monica had an interest and worked with the folks up in Monterey who did that and put together a grant proposal, a Stalton-Stahl-Kennedy grant proposal in 2003 or 2004. It was some time ago. So what you were actually hearing was a presentation to the board and a request for something. I don't know what happened. I mean, literally, that's what I heard. Unfortunately, that grant was not awarded. That study was never done. Monica has since been appointed to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and I don't know that she has time, or I'm sure she still has interest, but so we haven't heard more about that. So that person probably wouldn't be available again to do the study, but it would be a very good tool for us to be able to tell people that there really is some hard economic value to these uses, because right now it's just...
There's a study going on right now, but I don't know how far along. Kathy Fosmark got a grant with the Alliance for Communities for Sustainable Fisheries to do some work on the economic part of the equation there. Thanks. And I guess she's gotten started. And we also gave some money out for a peer review on the science advisory team stuff, so yeah. We'll see how that comes along.
That's going to be very interesting, and that's going to come out very soon.
Hopefully.
Yeah, and the Cable Committee has funded a number of good studies, but I think we could probably go further with the socioeconomic study, too. There is some work that's being done that's very interesting by NOAA right now as a part of their IFQ process, where they're trying to identify fishing-dependent coastal communities, and we're giving them information, too, so we're kind of watching what's going on with that.
Thank you.
We have one more comment over here. He wants to go home. Okay, and we have the future agenda items. We have no more. We are at item 8, which
we
is what I wanted to
try. SLO-SPAN.TV, which is much cooler anyway. And
TV?
TV, as TV. In television. And then the meeting will be uploaded and archived probably within 24 hours for looking at in the future. So you can check that out. And it is an incredible group of people who are meeting together and probably will have a big impact. And we are contracted to do all of their meetings. So.
Okay. Nancy, would you repeat again the day and the date and the time?
Thursday, June 7th at 9 a.m. is when it's going to start.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thursday can't be June 7th because I know Tuesday is June 6th. I just happen to have memorized that date.
And we'll be doing Election Night Live as well from San Luis Obispo Government Center. I don't know what the date is then. June
must be the 8th.
8th. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. It is Thursday.
Okay.
Is it Thursday or what?
It's Thursday. It's Thursday.
Thursday up in Monterey, if anybody wants
it to. It is. Okay. All in favor of staying here for another 4 hours, signify by saying.
Good night, Don.